Domestic preparedness is with former Fire Chief Lynn Miller, the Emergency Management Coordinator for Winchester, Virginia Emergency Management. He is a key preparedness official for the so-called Quad State region of Virginia, West Virginia, Maryland, and Pennsylvania, those counties, cities, and towns adjacent to or in close proximity to the Interstate 81 corridor that runs north from Harrisonburg, Virginia, to Chambersburg, Pennsylvania. The program is called the Quad State Emergency Preparedness Program, and what's unique about this regional preparedness approach is that it's city to city and county to county, as opposed to state to state. DomPrep is here because the architects behind this approach feel that it may have application in other regions of the country. So, Chief Miller, thanks for taking time to talk with us about Quad State.
John, I'm very appreciative that you're here and you have interest in Quad State.
Well, let's start with the four states and the counties and cities and towns that comprise this Quad State area. What distinguishes you geographically, and what do you have in common that makes you different from the other parts of your states?
All the jurisdictions that are involved in the Quad State initiative are within a 100-mile radius of the Washington, D.C. metropolitan area. We kind of lie geographically at the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains to the east, and we're considered as a primary evacuation route from the Washington metropolitan area. It involves the states of Pennsylvania, Maryland, West Virginia, and Virginia, and the jurisdictions that border the Interstate 81 corridor, which actually transverses north and south through the region.
Now, how many cities and counties, roughly, in terms of cities, do you have that...
Total jurisdictions probably are going to be somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 to 9 total jurisdictions, localities that are now involved with Quad State.
Well, who got the initiative off the ground? Who's the driver, and what precipitated the idea?
Well, the impetus actually started with the Marsh Institute, which is an institute within Shenandoah University, and former Secretary of the Army, John Marsh, who is the namesake of the Institute. And Secretary Morris has a deep commitment to regionalization and regional cooperation, as does the executive director of the Marsh Institute, Dr. William Shindo. They, approximately 2.5 years ago, made applications to the Department of Homeland Security to begin an emergency preparedness emergency management initiative through the Institute. And that followed through by creating a resource manual of individuals within the jurisdictions. And then I came on board trying to create a little more formalized, coordinated effort between the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm.
So who is the administrator that makes these things happen? Is there a secretariat, as it were, with a budget and performance metrics? And if so, to whom is it accountable?
Well, at this particular point in time, I think you could classify it maybe as a leaderless group. There was a survey that was forwarded to each one of the jurisdictions trying to determine if there was a need within the area to do more regional cooperation, and that has resulted in representation from each of the jurisdictions coming together to say to identify the need as well as obstacles that prohibits regional cooperation.
Well, why does this rural region see the need to prepare for a catastrophic incident? You mentioned evacuation from D.C. Is that pretty much the inspiration behind working this, or were there other things involved?
Well, the possibility of evacuation of the D.C. area was certainly a driving force, but we're also beginning to deal with issues such as pandemic influenza, looking at an all-hazards approach. We're very much of the realization that there is the Emergency Management Assistance Compact, or EMAC as it's better known, but we're trying to find something, a mechanism which will work on a day-to-day basis before EMAC actually comes into being.
Mm-hmm. Let's now talk about how this initiative tracks with DHS efforts to improve regional response. You say that 2.5 years ago... you had connected with DHS and gotten their blessing. My understanding, though, is you mentioned the EMAC process, that DHS is thinking more of a state-to-state effort, I guess leveraging the EMACs. But I get a sense that what you are doing is different.
Well, I think it is in so much as we're looking at resources that are available within a suburban, rural setting. that is adjacent to a metropolitan area, and trying to find means by which we can formally utilize those resources during various events between the time of the event and the 72-hour, which is somewhat a recognized period for EMAC to actually come into being.
Well, now, I'm sure there's some obstacles that you've had to overcome in the way of developing the cross-border collaboration, and I assume you have support from the governors. Can you talk a little bit about how you work through all of those obstacles in the path?
Well, probably the first thing is that we're trying to identify those obstacles. And as you go from state to state, the obstacles vary, quite honestly. There are some states whereas there is a statute that indicates before aid is given across state lines, the governor must approve that. In a time of emergency situation, it's sometimes awkward to try to get a governor's signature on a piece of paper before you render that aid. And while you're taking that time to go through the process, the emergency situation continues. Mm-hmm. So first is trying to identify the obstacles. Second is getting the cooperation of the key individuals within the region, within the jurisdictions to participate. And probably one of the biggest issues there is trying to ensure that you remove the turf issues, that the fear that somebody is coming in and trying to take over your responsibilities, if you will. So, but all those issues, it's building trust, it's building relationships with people and with jurisdictions.
Now, in terms of your elected officials, your state legislators are serving on the Quad State Legislative Council. Now, how has that worked, and how successfully has it addressed these kinds of cross-state boundary issues and the permanent lines of communication and dialogue between the state legislators and the region? I mean, I suspect that they're very much of a factor in building the collaboration and making it easy for you guys that are executing to overcome.
It would certainly appear that that cooperation is there, that they endorse that the concept. We will be giving a report to the Quad State Legislative Council, it's either September or October, in regards to what has currently been accomplished, what issues have been identified, and the goals that have been set by the task force. And it is hoped that we will get a further endorsement from the legislators at that point.
Can you say what the membership of the task force is that's working these? That might be significant for our folks to figure out who are the members that help work those issues.
Currently, as representative of emergency management from all but one of the jurisdictions within the region, as well as as representatives from some of the state agencies. We've had participation from Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Virginia from a state level, as well as emergency management, Department of Health, other state agencies, and local government.
In this segment, I want to move on to talking about training. How are you providing for education and training in the initiative? You work with both elected and administrative officials responsible for emergency management, as you said earlier, emergency management and preparedness. Elaborate a little bit on how you're approaching the training issues.
Well, again, we are somewhat in our infancy. We have had one meeting that was conducted on May the 16th of 2006, and the purpose of that was bring people together to create an environment of cooperation, and that was very much of a success. And in doing that, to identify goals and processes that we must go through to ensure that we are adhering to regulations that are in place. From that, we partnered with the Virginia Department of Health and the Quad State Emergency Management Task Force to sponsor, and the Marsh Institute certainly, to co-sponsor an influenza summit, which was attended by approximately 200 people from throughout the region. And that was an educational process to create a baseline of information relating to pandemic. We have another meeting that is currently scheduled for September of the Quad-State Task Force, and from that, various goals will be established, and we would anticipate we will establish objectives to reach those goals, some of which will relate to training, while others may relate to legislative actions that may be considered or reviewed as related to obstacles to emergency preparedness.
Mm-hmm. Now, what about the mock exercises that are testing emergency preparedness and response in the region? How often do you hold them, and what lessons learned have come out of them so far?
Well, we had a rather large exercise that was conducted in October of 2005. That involved some of the jurisdictions within the Quad-State region to look at cooperation, communications, interoperability, standards, and overall incident command and, mm-hmm. and NIMS compliance or NIMS adherence. That final report from the contractor has not yet been received. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that each of the localities have identified various items, and it will be interesting to see how all that comes out in the mm-hmm. final report from the state contractor.
Was there a scenario that you can share on that, or was it really just testing the linkages in terms of the exercise?
No, there was a very complex scenario that created events in each one of the jurisdictions, with one jurisdiction having a primary event, and most of it was dealing with homeland security issues mm-hmm. And some acts of terrorism.
I see. Okay. I want to turn now to sharing and outreach. What sort of coordination meetings do you hold for the local and state officials, both elected and administrative, and how frequent are they, and what are the results that come out of those specifically?
Well, I think first we're trying to hold the meetings on a quarterly basis. That will be in the beginning. Now, whether the organization grows to a point that there will be subcommittees from that general organization that will take on specific tasks, such as interoperability of communications, training initiatives, mutual aid or reciprocating agreements, the standardization and such, I guess that's yet to be determined. But I think that people, the participants, feel very strongly that there is a need for regional and interstate cooperation in dealing with emergency preparedness. You go back to a cliche that no man is an island unto himself. Well, certainly no jurisdiction is an island unto themselves when it comes to emergency management. Our constituency anticipates an effective and immediate response from emergency preparedness, and that's certainly what we want to provide.
Now, with the outreach, and actually going back to the discussion on the exercises, did you have the elected officials participate in that in a big way, or did they pretty much deed the discussion and the decision-making on standards and interoperability to your the experts?
They did participate in varying degrees. Mm-hmm. Some were very active. Some participated more as observers at that particular event. Mm-hmm. We would anticipate in future events, so trying to involve the elected officials more so they can see the strong points and the weak points mm-hmm. and identify both and be able to move forward from that perspective.
Yeah, I know in terms of exercises and building relationships, getting the city officials, the mayors and the county councilors and so forth, getting them involved is really key, is it not?
It really is a key issue. I mean, those are the officials that represent the constituency within the jurisdictions. Mm-hmm. They're also the officials that take care of the purse strings, allocate the funds, mm-hmm. And need to understand the program and the benefits of such a program.
And the early indications are that they're giving you full support for the effort?
Early indications are, yes, that they are mm-hmm. certainly supporting that effort.
Yeah, that's key. Now, I know that you issued the Quad-State Emergency Preparedness Handbook, which identifies the emergency services, resources, the officials and providers in the region. What has that done for you in terms of a measurable outcome? I suspect, you're getting to know your colleagues across the borders. But talk to us a little bit about what the shakeout from that handbook is.
Well, that particular handbook was created through the Marsh Institute and was actually created by my predecessor.
Mm-hmm.
It has been a tremendous resource just in beginning to know the people in the other jurisdictions, and mm-hmm. I think that somewhat is tangible but also intangible. I'm retired as fire and rescue chief for the city of Winchester, but there are fire and rescue chiefs within Hagerstown that is no more than 45 miles from here that I had not had the opportunity to meet, and now beginning to have the opportunity to meet and collaborate with those individuals. We all have the same mission. We all have the same goals, and probably going to approach them very much the same way.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes logical sense that we try to do those things together.
So the real shakeout is the more that you interact with those folks, even if it's in a preliminary way, you're sanity checking, vector checking the way you're approaching preparedness.
Yes, I think that's very true. And it's always nice to understand and to be familiar with the individual who's assisting you or whom you're assisting, rather than handshaking the first time at 2 o'clock in the morning on a snowy, windy night.
Now, I understand you provide regular reports to the localities and states in the region on the status of emergency preparedness in that region. What have you reported so far?
At this juncture, our report is that there is an organization that's very informal, that we are moving forward with regional collaboration, that we are concerned with regards to obstacles that prohibits that regional cooperation, and are requesting their endorsement and support in trying to remove some of those obstacles.
Now, in terms of when you're bringing new young people into the fire service and EMS, is the as part of the education and training process, are these young folks, do you acquaint them with the efforts that you're doing in Quad States so that that's part of their brief as they come into the fire service, that they're aware of this and need to think in that sort of global way in addition to just what's going on in the firehouse?
We certainly are trying to identify that there are regional compacts and there are regional efforts, and that we are there to serve the public in the same capacity. We have not gotten to the point of really looking at it globally through the entire Quad State region. I'm sure that will be yet to come. We're at a point where we're trying to crawl and then walk and then run and incorporate, you know, not only just the fire and rescue people, but to involve law enforcement, whether it would be an elected a sheriff or a police department. And even down to the ultimate goal would be have total and overall cooperation from an inspections department, a utilities department, a public works department. So that in the event there was something that occurred within a jurisdiction, that aid could be rendered, that you could call on that and get reciprocation.
Now, what about at the citizen level with the certs and what have you? Have you gotten citizen buy-in and awareness to the level that you want?
I think locally the citizens are becoming much more aware. As far as within the entire Quad State region and looking at regional, maybe not at this particular juncture. I know there are other jurisdictions within the Quad State task force that are also doing a tremendous job of public education and recruiting CERT and that regionalization approach that if they are trained as in CERT within West Virginia, there would certainly be reciprocation within the state of Virginia and can be relocated to the state of Virginia.
Now, there's one question I want to ask you. Winchester is known as a great center with its health facilities, a hospital. So that's sort of a regional hub, I guess, along the 81 corridor, correct, for casualties, dealing with mass casualties and what have you?
Yes, that's correct. So that's a trauma center.
The trauma center. So that's tell us a little bit about how that's operating in your thinking. Will there be, I guess, you know, the evacuation and what have you? Will you have hospitals in a box that will all sort of concentrate in this area? Or, you know, how are you approaching all that?
Well, we work very closely with the Winchester Medical Center and Valley Health Systems. And Valley Health Systems has connections with City Hospital in Martinsburg, West Virginia, as well as with Warren Memorial Hospital in Warren County and Shenandoah Memorial Hospital in Shenandoah County. They have also a very good working relationship with Rockingham Memorial. You know, we see that as a separate but joint effort in dealing with emergency management throughout the region. Winchester is a trauma center. But depending on what were to occur, we may very well have flybys to other medical facilities, and they will be a key coordinating factor within that.
So in terms of the linkages, you've got both private and public hospitals. You've got ambulance services, private and public, the county health officials. So whether you're talking pandemic or a WMD incident of some kind, you pretty much that's all part of the quad state approach, right?
Yes, that's part of the quad state approach. And I think you make a very good point also, John, when you start talking about the private health care and private ambulance services versus public. This has to be a partnership between private and public sectors. And within our local emergency planning committee within the city and dealing with pandemic particularly and within that particular task force, we are out and we have a private representative or representative, from the private sector that participates on that. That's another outreach effort to expand the educational process and the understanding.
I want to turn now to procurements and incident command. A couple of questions. The bottom line for all of this has to be how the effort that you're doing translates to budgets and equipment. Now, has the Quad State program generated requirements and budget lines and procurements and indeed grant applications, particularly for those systems that foster interoperability, communications interoperability and the like?
Again, the Quad State effort has not because it is in its infancy. However, within Virginia, we have a regional group, the top of Virginia or Northern Virginia regional group that's comprised of Warren County, Shenandoah County, Frederick County, and Winchester. And we have certainly moved forward in relationship to grant applications and have been awarded a couple of grant applications. In doing that, we were able to purchase a mobile air unit that is be used by all four jurisdictions and that is available to other jurisdictions within the region, whether in-state or out-of-state, upon request. And probably one of the biggest things that we have procured that is going to be very advantageous, and that is the procurement of RIOS interoperability equipment. There was one of those units that was purchased for each of the four jurisdictions. Some were going to be used on a permanent basis. Some will be on a mobile basis. The one that was purchased for the city of Winchester will be placed into a mobile command vehicle that is currently being refurbished that will give us the opportunity to have total communications interoperability with any communications or, with any jurisdiction within Quad State or outside Quad State. And the communications is a vital link. Without communications, we are not necessarily going to be able to operate.
Now, what about as that relates to incident command? Has the Quad State program had any impact on protocols for incident command, any modification in the routine response under the mutual aid? And, yeah, talk to us a little bit about NIMS compliance issues as well.
Well, obviously, there is NIMS compliance that is a mandate from the federal government through the states for each one of the jurisdictions. And NIMS, in concept, should create uniformity within operations. The Quad State, if this initiative continues to move forward as we anticipate that it will, should create cross-training with NIMS within each one of the jurisdictions. And linked with that is incident command system. And unified command. Each of these are vital to accurate operations that ensures service to the public, but also ensures the safety to the emergency response personnel.
I want to talk now about Quad State's relevance nationally. What are the specific issues you're preparing for now, and what are you doing about it? You talked about pandemic flu. Are there any others, and can you tell us a little bit more about your approach to the pandemic flu response, should it happen?
Pandemic is identified, and the information as we've received will be probably very widespread and could last 6 to 8 weeks, but there could be 3 or 4 cycles of pandemic within a jurisdiction. The federal government has basically provided information that when you have, if there is a pandemic, that each of the jurisdictions will be on their own. And it is something that within a particular region will not be isolated to the city of Winchester only or to the city of Martinsburg only. So any coordination of efforts that we can bring about that would help to better coordinate, provide communications with the status of the pandemic within a jurisdiction, how it is cycling, and how we are beginning to recover from it is certainly got to be beneficial to all the individuals within the region. We're also looking at terrorism, weapons of mass destruction, as well as the day-to-day normal operations that we may have joint response that will be more conducive to operations.
How are you prepared for mass evacuation from Washington and the National Capital Region? Now, that is a priority focus for you, is it not?
Yes, it is a priority focus, and we're trying to establish sheltering and traffic routes. If probably one of the fears and one of the things we need to prepare for in the region is that particular day if something were to happen within the Washington metropolitan area, where one morning we wake up and we have 150,000 people that are coming our direction. We need to be prepared to shelter those people. We need to have the cooperative effort of the private sector and public sector in the sheltering process for short term and possibly even long term. If one were to review some of the fallout from Hurricanes Katrina and Rita, you would determine that people have evacuated the area, have gone to other areas of the country. Some might be Midwest. There's certainly families within our particular area that have come from the New Orleans area that their intentions at this point are not to go back to the New Orleans area. So you have a short-term sheltering, but you also have a reestablishment of lives and reestablishment of a family within another area that was not a planned reestablishment. So all of these things have to be taken into consideration and some preparation made. And that's a major undertaking for any jurisdiction.
And were you all starting to work on that before Katrina and Rita? You'd anticipated that. That just sort of provided additional lessons learned, I guess.
We anticipated that we were a primary evacuation site or host site, if you will, from the Washington metropolitan area. The lessons being learned from Rita and Katrina are certainly driving some of those points home.
Wow, yeah. Now, as I said in my introduction, you all are seeing that this approach you're taking from the city to city and county to county might have application elsewhere in the country. Have you had inquiries from any particular regions? And indeed, what you've mentioned that it's suburban, rural, adjacent to metropolitan areas. What's the model again, if you can restate that? And have you got any examples of folks that might be interested in hearing how you're going about this initiative?
We've had some indirect inquiries at this particular juncture, no direct inquiries. We see regionalization as being probably the wave of the future. I can recall back several years ago, many years ago, when there was an event that took place within the Washington metropolitan area in 1968-69. There was not a good collaborative effort within the Washington metropolitan area, particularly with the District of Columbia, for mutual aid response. That event brought that to the forefront, and there certainly is a better plan is available. If you lie within an area such as we do, where our resource levels are not necessarily the same as what they would be within the Washington metropolitan area, it is vital that we have regional cooperation. To stand out and indicate that, yes, I can shelter 100,000 people or I can take care of a major pandemic alone, it is ludicrous. Excuse my expression, but it just cannot happen. You may survive it, but to what degree and what proficiency? So there are much better ways of doing it in a collaborative effort or certainly better.
Chief, I have one more question. Do you have anything else you might want to add generally from an operational standpoint that would be of interest to our listeners and members out there?
John, from an operational perspective, I think that it needs to be understood. This is not a mechanism to distract from or deteriorate any jurisdictional incident command system, NIMSIM system, or any service provided, but rather a system to complement the incident command system. As an example, if you were to have a major incident and the incident commander were the police chief of a particular jurisdiction, any resources that would respond as requested, and I think as requested is very important, to that particular jurisdiction would still fall under the auspices operationally of that incident commander, that local incident commander. This is not a mechanism by which somebody else is going to come into a jurisdiction and take over, but rather to complement and to increase those resource levels to provide an incident commander with what he needs through the ICS system and through the NIM system to better perform his responsibilities and duties. In our particular area, emergency management is somewhat the lead in the regional efforts, and many of those people that are involved as emergency management coordinators within the region are also have a heavy background in fire and rescue, and we are fostering those relations and continue to foster those relations with the other emergency management agencies within the jurisdiction, such as law enforcement. And again, trying to extend that into some of the more non-traditional, non-emergency agencies, such as inspections or public works or public utilities.
Well, Lynn, this has been terrific, most informative. And thanks again for your time and your service to the Commonwealth of Virginia and indeed the region.
Well, John, we certainly appreciate it. And anything we can do to advance that, please don't hesitate, you or anybody else, to give me a call. We'll certainly be glad to discuss it further.
Thanks, Lynn.